market needs education. The market needs authority that's behind the Bitcoin only position. I feel like all of the authority is behind a multi-coin or an anti-Bitcoin position. So we need to keep pushing authority behind a pro-Bitcoin position, because guess what? Bitcoin is scientific. Bitcoin is the most scrutinized software project in the history of mankind. Bitcoin is rooted in ancient wisdom. Like, Bitcoin is incredibly deep, and if it works, its promise is awesome. So we need authority to push that message. Like, this is a better operating system for humanity. The cost of not adopting it is huge.
Hello and welcome to Bitcoin with Jake. This is a podcast all about people's personal journeys to Bitcoin. I wanted to know more about the people converging on this new form of money. Why do they see value in it? What skills enable their understanding? How is it changing their lives? If you're a founder looking for funding or an investor looking to make investments, then please reach out as I develop my network in the space. Do me a favor and chuck us a 5-star rating on whichever app you're using to listen, or a like if you're watching it somewhere. As insignificant as this may seem, they help a startup project like this hugely. Lastly, if you have any questions at all, please just reach out. The easiest place to find me is on Twitter at Jake E.S. Woodhouse. Now, I'd like to take a quick moment to talk about our sponsor. Fast Bitcoins are a Bitcoin exchange who you should definitely take a look at next time you're thinking of making a Bitcoin purchase. They're a great team, which for me is always the key to due diligence, whilst their product has a ton of features useful to every Bitcoiner. Check out my episodes with Danny Brewster, the founder CEO, and Nathan Smith, the chief compliance officer, to learn more about the people behind the brand. Thank you to Fast Bitcoins for sponsoring the show. Now, on to today's episode. Today I'm speaking with CK. Welcome, CK. How are you?
I'm good. On the eve of Thanksgiving here in the US. Excited to chat.
Nice. That's tomorrow, is it?
Yeah.
Nice. So you have a big family get together for that weekend.
Yep. And I'm responsible for making the turkey. So first time.
Well, that's all your home cooking skills coming into play that I've been following on Twitter. So what's the key to making a good turkey on Thanksgiving?
I personally think the secret is just a lot of oranges.
Okay. Wonderful.
So just oranges on the inside. Orange juice, some squeeze oranges on the outside.
Nice. Well, one person, it's very unlikely to ever happen, but my wife absolutely hates anything orange. So if you ever end up with her on your Thanksgiving table, beware. Okay, well, this is a Bitcoin podcast, so I'm sure we can talk about food. We can talk about anything, to be honest, but I'm keen to learn about...
How could you hate oranges and Bitcoin? Bitcoin's orange, right?
No, true. You know? That's very true. Well, she's along for the ride in terms of Bitcoin, so she has no choice there, but... Yeah, it's funny. She just literally any orange fruit, she cannot go near it. So it's just a complete phobia of hers. Anyway, luckily she's not coming for dinner with you. So no problem there. Yeah. So Bitcoin. So CK, so how did you hear about it? When did it become interesting to you? Why was it interesting? Can you remember back to the day when it first came across your radar, so to speak?
The first time it ever came across my radar, I was in high school, but that was like very early on. That was 2011. So... Yeah. It was just one of those things where it's like, oh, there's this thing called Bitcoin. And just like, all right, cool. It's a thing.
Yep.
Whatever, you know? Yep. And then it wasn't until 6 years later, 2017, where I actually did some research on it. And I had a former coworker and friend, someone I respected. She called me up and she was like, hey, Bitcoin, you need to check it out. And I ended up driving to a wedding all by myself the very next weekend, and I binge listened every single episode of Laura Shin's Unchained up until that point, which is at the time it was like the number one SEO podcast about crypto and blockchain. During that time was like the scaling debate and like the Bcash versus Bitcoin hard fork, wild time to be in Bitcoin. So it immediately captivated me. I have a little bit of like educational history and open and like understanding open source development and organizational structures and things like that. So I kind of was like well primed for understanding like Bitcoin and its importance in the world. But I mean, after that trip, that wedding drive, I was like immediately like completely hooked. I was like, Bitcoin's the future. Blockchain's probably going to be a big deal. Immediately went to Coinbase, bought Bitcoin, bought Ethereum, bought Litecoin. All three coins are available. and just started just obsessing, researching, getting on Twitter, watching YouTube videos, the whole nine yards. And I actually quit my job like within a week of the top of the Bitcoin price. So quit my job with no plan. My plan was to figure it out on the internet. That was it. And for Christmas that year, I quit my job 2 weeks before Christmas, because in the US you give 2 weeks notice.
Yep.
So I put my 2 weeks in right before Christmas. And I asked for a ticket to the North American Bitcoin Conference for my parents for Christmas. So I ended up going to the North American Bitcoin Conference. At that point, like, I have to give myself some credit, because it was a wild time to get into Bitcoin. And I kind of saw through the bullshit pretty quickly. I would say I was pretty much a Bitcoin maximalist within 3 months of discovering Bitcoin.
Okay.
So I go into that conference open-minded, but for the most part, Bitcoin maximalist. I didn't have a job at that point, so I was definitely, you know, burning my savings. But I met the team at BTC Inc. there, and there's this guy named Bryce, and Bryce was the CRO. And at the time, I was living in San Francisco, and I shook his hand, said, "Bitcoin sales, San Francisco." He said, "Here's my card, give me a call." 2 weeks later, had a job.
Sweet.
So, yeah. Doing event sales, and that's kind of, I mean, I've been at BTC Inc. ever since February 2018. So, wow. Been there for a long time. Pretty much did every job you can do, including writing articles. And now I'm at this point, I'm the GM, COO. You know, just making things happen. So it's a good time. I feel like it's my dream job to be at BTC Inc. I've seen, you know, a bear market, a bull market, now enduring another bear market. So I feel like I've been operating within the Bitcoin space for some time. And I mean, honestly, it's the most exhilarating place to be in the world right now. I don't think it's a question.
Well, and it's that process of taking a risk, like you quit your job and you find a subject that you're really passionate about. And if you can get that kind of mecca of, you know, passion combined with meaningful work, then, you know, inevitably, like, you have serious purpose in your life and things are really looking rosy. So yeah, I commend you there. That's awesome. It's one of those things. You can be in a job, you're thinking about something different, you're wondering if it's the kind of grass is greener type vibe, and then actually you just have to take a risk at some point. And had you not like quit, and had you not got on the plane and gone to that other conference, then, you know, you wouldn't be here today. Awesome. I love those kind of stories. So what I'm intrigued by is your comment about being primed to understand Bitcoin. So what was it that you were doing before you came across Bitcoin that helped you understand it?
Yeah, good question. So personally, just to zoom out, I think we are very much in the early adopter phase of Bitcoin. I think people wildly underestimate how early we are. Mm. They think we're further on in the adoption cycle. So I think we're very, very, very much at the beginning, less than 1% global adoption in terms of like actual Bitcoin adoption. So with that being said, I think the best way to think about the way people understand Bitcoin, which is a pretty unintuitive thing, early, is they have to be primed.
Mm.
So for me personally, and I think you need to be less primed to get it now than 4 years ago. And then 4 years ago, you needed to be less primed than 4 years prior to that. Mm. You know, in 2011, to get Bitcoin, you had to be a cypherpunk.
Yeah.
You had to be on the cryptography mailing list, yeah. You know?
Yeah.
And then, you know, let's call it 2015, to get into Bitcoin, you have to be like a libertarian.
Yep.
And then I think a lot of people in the tech space started getting into Bitcoin in 2017. Mm. And I was in Silicon Valley. I got introduced to it by a tech coworker. I found a lot of early networking success because I was able to go to all these Bitcoin meetups that were like thriving up until pretty much COVID. And for me, I was in tech and geographically in the Bay Area. I was into personal finance and money and investing. I researched open source software development at universities and how they use open source software for big data research, which is like really fucking random.
That's but so niche, yeah.
Works for this. It worked. My brother is like very technical, and he just like threw me a lot of, you know, technical podcasts and content. So I was already exposed to kind of like, you know, tech product. And then lastly, I worked at shitty startups that raised money at every single startup I was at. And so I realized that you didn't have to be good to raise money. And then I saw all these ICOs who were raising money at extraordinary valuations compared to tech companies I was at. Mm. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, just because they're slapping a token on it, they're raising orders of magnitude more than my startup. So I was like,
there's something
off here. Yeah. I didn't fully, like, I don't think I fully got it, but I knew something was off there. And that's all I needed to start looking, like, what's wrong with blockchain? Mm. What's wrong with crypto? And the only people who were saying anything wrong with it was Bitcoiners. Mm. So it was a pretty quick path to the maximalist, I think.
Wow. I love that kind of framing of everyone has to be primed in some sense, but that priming is reducing in significance over time because, I mean, I would assume, and at least in my case, the education in the space is improving so much. And you can 100%. Look at it from a technical perspective, you can look at it from a philosophical perspective, from an engineering perspective, however you want to take it on. It's mm-hmm. easier now to grasp what's going on based on the work that's been done to assimilate what it actually is. And, you know, that's thanks to, you know, people like Bitcoin Magazine, to be honest, and putting on conferences and the other educators in the space that have come out and done the work they've done. So when you think about if we are as early as sub 1% globally and how good we feel the education is today, well, how good is it going to be in a couple of years' time? It's just the speed to understand that this is the one you want to look at, and the 20,000 other bits of shit on CoinMarketCap just don't even bother. So that presumably will.
It's a big process.
Yeah,
it's a big process. We have to educate a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, no, like, I think we're gonna do it. And like, here's the thing that's on our side, unfortunately, is that the central bankers and the, you know, big bureaucratic decision makers, they're making the case for us as well. Right, there's nothing that we can do that makes the case more than Trudeau.
Yeah,
right, there's nothing we can do to make the case more than Kanye West getting canceled. There's nothing more that we can do than Russia getting completely blocked or Iran getting completely blocked. Like, that's the ultimate thing, because the reality is that Bitcoin's money that works. You can count it, you can send it, you can hold it, it works. All the other shit doesn't work, and they're making it not work by weaponizing it and whatever else they're doing. So, you know, whatever we're doing is just a drop in the bucket compared to them.
Yeah, it's cool, isn't it? You can't help but feel that one's on the right side of history in that sense. But equally, whenever one feels that, I guess you have to temper that with what might go wrong. I mean, things change all the time, don't they? But I've found that the more I've learned about Bitcoin, the more confident I've got in it. And the confidence that has increased to some people that I talk to about it, they're like, that's scary. Like, it's scary how confident you are about this. Like, what's going on? And almost like they kind of push back from this extreme confidence. They don't understand like where it comes from. They haven't done the work to understand why the confidence exists. But equally, it's quite overbearing perhaps sometimes. I mean, at least I have to temper myself and be careful.
Yeah. You need to temper yourself. The thing is, Parker Lewis has the best quote about this. Bitcoin is unintuitive, and then it's hyperintuitive. So like, for everyone, it's unintuitive. So not only is everyone stupid, but they're also operating on fiat. And like, they just don't get Bitcoin. It's like, I don't know, someone who doesn't know how to read looking at a book, you know, they just like, what's this piece of paper? You know, who cares? Like, can I throw it at you?
Yeah, can I fire? Can I light fire with it or something? Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, so it's just like, you know, it depends. Like, so, and then once it becomes hyperintuitive, you're like, oh my god, this changes everything. That contrast makes you look like a crazy person.
It does. It does. Oh, it's cool.
So you have to be cognizant of that reality.
And I mean, something I've been thinking about recently, which is that sometimes actions speak louder than words, and I can already feel more confidence in the future on the basis of increasing my, you know, my, if I think about my net wealth, what percentage of it's in Bitcoin, the higher that percentage has got, the more confident I feel about the future and the less stressed I am about, you know, financial commitments in the short term. And I've been able to recently decide to quit my fiat job, go full time on this podcast, spend as much time as I can with my young family.
Congratulations.
Yeah, no, I'm very excited. And it's not, you know, it's not making money today per se, or a lot of money, but it's making a little bit, which I took as, you know, proof of concept and a bit of traction. In 12 months time, speaking to people like yourself, I'm hoping that the friends that I create through this process, you know, you will have created a decent bit of good value, etc., and that will turn into something else. Whereas if you sit in that fiat mining job, you know, the upside is the salary, the downside is, well, you're missing out on all this potential upside elsewhere. It's like, what's the biggest risk? Okay, well, the risk is not getting your salary, but what's the upside that you're missing out on? And without Bitcoin as my savings account, essentially, I don't have the same kind of level of confidence on the future. And it, yeah, anyway, I'm going to go and do my own thing. Thanks, guys. I'm off. And people are like, oh, what are you doing? But why bother explaining? Actually, you're better off just doing it. And when you say, you know, you might see them a year later, and hopefully by then they're like, hang on, well, how did you do that? And then you can explain, and kind of the virality of it. So extraordinary at a grassroots level, isn't it? When you think about it like that, like I'm just one person sitting in Australia that's decided to do this, that grew up in the UK and has learned about Bitcoin online. How many millions of people around the world are sitting in their hometowns thinking the same thing? It's mad when you start kind of ratcheting up the numbers, isn't it?
Oh yeah. No, one of my big shticks is that no one is bullish enough. So
yeah. Well, let's get to that. I love that.
I don't think it's humanly possible to be bullish enough, but because we're not geniuses.
Yeah.
Like our human minds are limited in our ability to think exponentially and then think how and understand like the law of large numbers as it applies to people leveraging a superior monetary system to make economic calculation and allocate resources.
For those people out there that haven't necessarily thought through this, can you give us like a simple example as to what you mean and just talk us through it?
Okay. I like to say this. When it came to electricity, the only person who's even remotely bullish enough, even like remotely directionally correct, was like Nikola Tesla. So Nikola Tesla talked about how electricity at some point would create a currency that would end world wars and would end violence. So he's like the only person who was like remote, like this is pre like fiber or like electricity becoming a commonplace, you know, in the developed world. This is before anyone had just regular lights. He was like thinking about like, what is this going to do to the world? No one else was thinking about that. Everyone was off. 100% of people were wrong. It was, you know, the 0.00000001% genius that actually could see the future. Mm-hmm. So like, if Bitcoin works, it's the same level as introducing electricity to a world that was like, you know, running on wood fires and coal.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah, kerosene lamps and candles.
That's my assessment of Bitcoin, is that's on that level. Mm. It's gunpowder, it's electricity, it's telecommunication. It's kind of like on that level. So I'm a big fan of the book, The Sovereign Individual, and they frame things as like the logic of violence and what encryption and encrypted base money does to the logic of violence. And it changes everything, right? It changes the calculation of making decisions at every level of society. So again, like that's what I'm saying. No one is bullish enough because like no one's thinking about that shit. Mm. And like, I'm not smart. Seriously, I'm really not that smart. I'm just like a semi-average guy who's into Bitcoin. Like there's way smarter people. And I don't think that most of them are accurately calibrating hyper-Bitcoinization. I'm not saying hyper-Bitcoinization is guaranteed. I'll be the first to tell you that, you know, there's two options. It works or it doesn't work. Mm. So if it doesn't work, you know, I hope you have some guns and bullion. But if it does work, then we should talk about like what that looks like. Mm. I just don't think anyone's talking about it.
It's interesting, isn't it? And the truth is no one knows either. So it's like, place your bets. You guys can decide what you think. And it's very obvious to me where like I see hope in the world, and that helps to, let's say, solidify my belief in Bitcoin as the place I want to hold my value and the place I want to work and the place I want to meet people and the place that I want to support. But there's no, you know, it might not work. Who knows? One of the things that this podcast has helped me understand, you know, even let's say I'm at 50 episodes roughly. So that's about 50 hours of conversations with people from all over the world who've made similar large changes in their life to adopt this thing. Why is that? Like, what do they see in it that's interesting? And have I ever noticed this with anything else ever before? And the truth is no. So it's like, okay, well, this is a very small microcosm of what's going on. But if you can ratchet this number up across a population globally, then I think it's a pretty good bet that, you know, these people are all on the right path. And that to me is an interesting way of thinking about how to allocate capital, that I found useful, at least. Something I'd like to draw back to, which is the primed discussion we were having at the start. And so for me, free and open source software was not even a phrase I'd thought about before getting into Bitcoin. And I'd spent some years in the startup space. So, you know, VCs trying to raise money, looking at digital products, creating network effects and digital monopolies and all this kind of stuff that I'm sure you'd be very familiar with, having spent some time in Silicon Valley. For those that don't understand FOSS, can you explain it a little bit? And what was the importance of the research you'd done on it that helped you understand Bitcoin?
So the whole point about Bitcoin is that anyone can download the ledger and anyone can audit the code, rebuild the code, create something that functions with and interoperates with the code of Bitcoin without asking permission. They can look at it all. They can fork the code and change it. They can audit it from top to bottom. So the only way that that's possible is because Bitcoin's code is not proprietary. It's not owned by any company. It's not owned by any individual. And even if you don't like what the current developers that are working on it are doing, you can always take their existing code base, fork it, and then manage it yourself. And then anyone can, and if it stays interoperable with Bitcoin, then you're managing your own Bitcoin code base and you make the changes. And you can just copy all their changes, you know, whatever you want to, and then put it on there. It's like, that's what free and open source means. So that is what makes Bitcoin not just like SaaS software or proprietary software, but it makes it almost like a force of nature or like a plant or a living organism, because it just replicates on it. You know, as people adopt it, they replicate it for it. That is the most powerful way to build computer software. I'm not a developer, but I heard a developer talk about, it was like, hey, computer science classes are pretty much teaching you how to Google code and put it together. Like, that's okay. Just pretty much it. So Macs, everyone uses a MacBook right now that is built on open source software. So they use open source software to build their proprietary software. And that's what all code is pretty much based off of at this point. So I don't know if that is a good explanation, but...
No, it is. It's helpful because I think a lot of people, most of us haven't done computer science degrees. Most of us aren't software developers. We all use technology. So we're happy to be users. We don't necessarily need to know how it works underneath the hood.
Yeah.
But it does help when it's something like this, which is a money. It's like, okay, well, if it's money, like, I don't want to accept money from someone that I don't believe someone else will use. Do you know what I mean? The game theory involved in why money is important and how it's useful in society. You know, I'm not going to do an hour of work for someone and get paid in dirt. It just doesn't make sense, right?
I mean, so, people do.
Well, they do, Drew.
They're forced to. That's like one of the troubles with our society, as we live in this world where people are forced to do that.
True. Okay. And so let's circle back to The Sovereign Individual, which is a incredibly insightful book. And I mean, quite formative in terms of, I have, yeah. My biggest takeaway was this idea of kind of smaller city states. I don't know why that's the particular angle that I remember more, but the way it really gets you thinking about, like, well, what is freedom and how do I interact with the world and what is right and wrong? That was also very helpful. But yeah, for those that out there that haven't read it, if people get paid in dirt, like, why are they forced to do that? And how does that play into more of the kind of sovereign individual thesis?
Yeah, I mean, the whole thesis about the sovereign individual is that we currently live in a world that's a nation-state monopoly world, where geographical bounds and the ability for a nation-state to hold a tax base hostage is very relevant. And effectively what they predict, the book was published in 1997, so prior to Bitcoin existing, and you know that means they wrote it even before then, but essentially what they predict is that there's going to be cryptographic money that enables people and effectively remote work, and that combination enables people to become geographically free, take their value and take their labor and work from any jurisdiction. And that's going to open up what they call regulatory arbitrage or geographical arbitrage or jurisdictional arbitrage. This ability to, like, let's say, serve the Western market from Asia, or, yeah, that's just a good example, serve the Western market from South America. And they think that the ability to transfer your property with you is been one of the things that's limited people from doing that, because, you know, banking systems suck. If you are an expat, you're exposed to the shitty fiat of, you know, whatever nation you're in. You'd be lucky if you're a citizen of a third world country to have an American bank account and get dollars. Like, Bitcoin explodes that whole thing, right? Now anyone gets access to Bitcoin by just downloading Moon Wallet, right? That's all it takes, then accepting it.
Yeah, it's crazy.
They have Bitcoin, and it's 10 times better than, a million times better than the dollar, a gajillion times better than, you know, whatever peso, or who knows what we're dealing with here, you know, like something pound, who cares? So I think over time that just continues to compound. I like to think that Bitcoin wins at the margins, right? So
yeah, I love that, you know, phrase.
Let's say I'm in the US, you know, I got credit cards, I got all this stuff. I don't, like, it doesn't make that much of a difference for me. Yeah, it's given me a lot more wealth. On the grand scheme of things, it doesn't make that much of a difference for me. But, you know, in countless nations across the planet, there's people who are just like struggling to get dollar access. And all of a sudden, if they get into Bitcoin and get into crypto, they get dollar access, they get Bitcoin access, they get all this other stuff too. You know, they could even get, you know, US equity access if they are sophisticated enough. So it's a whole new world for them. And as this stuff becomes more widely adopted, it's just going to compound, right? And that force is going to actually start really making a huge effect.
And even in the handful of conversations I've had on this podcast, I've spoken with people from countries such as Nigeria, Kenya, Tonga, and Togo, and Guatemala. And these are places where the local financial system just doesn't function very well. And Bitcoin completely changes that. And in particular, the one that I think is a really easier example to understand is the remittance market and sending money. You know, when you're working abroad, you want to send money back to your family, and your family ends up having to pay Western Union a cut and having to pay a bunch of other people a cut outside the Western Union, who are essentially the local gang. And before you know it, you know, $100 that your cousin earned in a city somewhere around the world has become 40 bucks in the back pocket of the person. So they've lost 60% of that person's labor in between a family member. And it's insane how much value is disappearing. And Bitcoin, of course, solves that, in that it's a peer-to-peer network. There's no one in between, and boom, off you go. So I'm completely with you on
digital.
That. Yeah. So, and that's a really interesting idea though, isn't it? This concept of what the nation state is today. And I mean, for me anyway, I was never taught to even question what a nation state is. You know, going through the education that I had, the degree that I took, the world I ended up in, it was, I was taught how to make money. I wasn't taught to ask the question, what is money? And that's one of the fascinating things about the Bitcoin rabbit hole, is these kind of conversations you end up happening. So on that level, I mean, what's your view on what might happen? Like, what are some of the biggest changes that may happen in the next kind of 10 years, do you think? And I mean, I'm never one for like predictions per se, but have you seen anything that you're particularly interested in and following?
My goal is to be directionally correct. I'm not trying to make, you know, specific predictions. I'm trying to like be in the right direction. That's all you can hope to do, I think, because that's how big these changes are going to be.
And so how do you make a directionally correct? How do you think that?
Well, for me, like, you have to focus on first principles. So I think like Bitcoin is efficiency in the energy markets. So what that means to me is that any energy producer that wants to be competitive will adopt Bitcoin. And then what does that do? And then if Bitcoin makes energy producers more efficient, then energy production capability that was once unprofitable now becomes profitable. So that means more energy. Mm-hmm. And then I try to think about, what does that mean? Okay, here's another one. Okay, Bitcoin, I really like infinity divided by 21 million. Some people call that hyperbolic or whatever. Yeah. I think it's fantastic, because this is, I got to give a shout out to my colleague, Nolan Bowerly, but his Twitter handle is CountBTC. And he says, Bitcoin is a system where you can actually count. So it's the world divided by 21 million, and you can now count the world. You can figure it out. Yeah. Like, a good money allows you to count. It allows you to make good economic calculation. It's that simple. It works. The bad money doesn't work. The good money works. Good money lets you count. Bad money confuses you. And it deceives you. It steers you in the wrong direction. So if now you can count, one, you make better decisions, and that compounds. And then two, the fixed supply money, you have to scale it to everything. So if you have to scale it to everything, and then you also know that we make better decisions on it, that means infinity divided by 21 million, infinity gets bigger because you're making better decisions. You're making better economic calculation. We're organizing in a more efficient way, and society is working better to create value. So there's more value. So, I mean, I don't know if I'm going on a crazy rabbit hole here, or if you or the listeners are actually following what I'm trying to say, but I just try to think as baseline as possible to kind of point my assumptions.
No,
so I think people are not bullish enough on Bitcoin because, one, they can't envision infinity getting bigger. And then two, they're not good at scaling infinity divided by 21 million.
Yeah, so let's just pick apart what that means, that the infinity increases. So something I was recently thinking through was this idea of productivity gains and how, you know, GDP is the metric that's used to measure the revenue of an economy, essentially, or the value of an economy. But it's a pretty poor metric when it comes to actually like how people feel and what life is like on a day-to-day basis. Shout out to the Heavily Armed Clown for his website, What the Fuck Happened in 1971, that just shows you so clearly how different areas of life compared to what our grandparents had has just completely disintegrated. Basically, having a good money will allow for a productivity gain that at this stage we have no ability to quantify. And that, in a sense, increases the total value of commerce being conducted in the world, which in theory makes the potential market size for Bitcoin something we can't comprehend. Is that where you were going with that?
Yeah, I mean, that everything you said, I stand by it. But on top of that, like, think about what the fiat system requires in order to function and how few people on the planet it actually serves. So the fiat system requires effectively the slavery of the global south, like pretty much siphoning those resources at a discount. And then who does it serve? It serves less than 20% of the population effectively. So Bitcoin does not require the slavery of the global south. It actually empowers the global south. And on top of that, it's permissionless. It's permissionless as owning a cell phone, which the market has, you know, effectively spread cell phones pretty far and wide at this point. You know, the vast majority of human beings on the planet can get access to it. So better money that has ever existed, ever, 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 available to 80%+ of the planet. Okay, 60%+ of the planet. If you just like don't think that Starlink is going to work and stuff like that and other projects like that. So it's an order of magnitude better of what we're talking about right now, which is the enslavement of the global south in order to bank 20% of the planet.
It's so massive, isn't it? I mean,
it's huge.
I've never been to Silicon Valley, but I attended a couple of what are called talent investment programs. Like, they're similar to like a Y Combinator. I don't know if you've ever heard of Entrepreneur First or Antler before, but they basically put 100 people in a room. They pay for them to be there, 50% are technical, 50% non-technical. You've got 3 months to come up with a billion-dollar business idea, and they'll put in seed funding, you know, if they think you're any good. It was like startup training on steroids, you know, build us more digital monopolies, cool, please. It was really interesting. But the whole point of it was like, think big, think really fucking big. And none of us were thinking big enough, and the market sizes weren't huge enough to kind of disrupt, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And lots of us failed. We just didn't make it through what was essentially a real life game show. But what's interesting to me from that experience is just the mentality of venture capital and what it's looking for in terms of opportunities. Its failure rate is very high, but they don't care as long as they hit one home run. And this relationship between VC and Bitcoin is actually a bit of a strange one, with most of these, you know, crypto funds basically just printing their own money, pumping their own bags and dumping them on retail, which has proven to be fraudulent as fuck, to be honest. But when you talk through the slavery of the global south, the ability for people with now access to smartphones to access a genuine sound money, it's a massive idea that just completely caught my attention over time. I'm like, whoa, all this other stuff I've ever talked about, like, forget creating another Google. Why would you do that when you can work on what is Bitcoin? It's absolutely mad, isn't it? So on that note, like, what are some of the things that have changed in your life when you've come across this? So, you know, you used to have obviously a Silicon Valley mindset in terms of working startups. How have things changed now?
I think Bitcoin helped me get out of my bubble, to be honest. Like, okay, I'm talking to you, a gentleman from Australia. I've talked to more Australians in my life because of Bitcoin. I'm talking to more Latvians in my life because of Bitcoin. More Englishmen, more Dutchmen, more El Salvadorians, you name it. More Mexicans, more Canadians. I've become a global-minded person. Like, Bitcoin connects you to a global network. Beyond that, like, the side effects of being aligned with the work that you do is, like, exponential productivity gain. So I've just never been more productive in my life. I've never been more motivated in my life. Never been more successful in my life. So it's all connected.
Awesome. Well, a small correction. So I actually grew up in the UK and I now live in Australia because my wife's Aussie. So I moved here. But I've
loved the usual story. An Englishman and an Australian lady.
Yeah, we all get dragged out to Australia eventually.
You look tan, though, so it's suiting you. So you look tan, it's suiting you.
Yeah, well, the sun's just starting to come out here in Melbourne. But it's, I mean, on a very personal level, the 3 years I've lived here, basically 50% of that time was under the harshest lockdown that, you know, was pretty much known globally. Melbourne was awful. Police state overnight.
Horrible. Absolutely. It's insane.
I now hold a hell of a lot more Bitcoin than I did at the start of this process. And a lot of that's because I'm not fucking owning physical real estate in an area where they can tell me what to fucking do. It doesn't make any sense. And this is one of the attributes to Bitcoin that has really caught my attention, that then, you know, you draw back to the sovereign individual. It's like, well, actually, if my wife and I and our two small babies decided to pick up, get on a plane and leave, we could go with all of our wealth. Thanks very much. See you later.
Liquidate into Bitcoin,
right?
Put it in a number of different schemes in order to de-risk it, change your location.
And you know, your position as the general manager of BTC Inc., you would have met so many people that have made similar decisions to people like myself around the world who are all doing this, which I find fascinating.
I know plenty of people who are literally just like traveling expats who are effectively COVID exiles. Wow. I mean, it's pretty wild. But at the same time, these people are the bleeding edge of freedom, you know, the front lines.
Well, I'm tempted to join them and get the hell out of here, I must say. Where are they going? Where excites you as a potential location to set up shop? And what thought process have you put into that, if anything?
Well, the U.S. is a very interesting place because the U.S. has inter-country geographical arbitrage. So the states are effectively like mini countries that compete with each other. Yeah. But they have the same money and the same identity system and the same language. Yeah. So it's very easy to just leave and go to a different state and they compete with each other. I moved from California to Tennessee.
Okay.
People in Australia that I know, they're moving to Singapore or they're moving to the global south. They're moving to primarily like Mexico or some Colombia, some El Salvador. You know, it just really depends. A lot of Mexico. Honestly, I'm super bullish on Mexico. I think it's a very bullish place. Great geography, great resources, amazing culture. A lot of room to benefit from Bitcoin. I think they'll be open to it. I think it's self-sustaining. They have a lot of great agriculture. So bullish Mexico. Mm. Yeah, I just try to think of like what areas have cheap labor, high education and negative exposure to the dollar system. And then those are usually good places to make bets. Richer countries in that mix probably have better infrastructure, so for us soft, you know, Western people, it might be a little bit more accommodating. But you know, Costa Rica, you know, you see Francis Pouliot having a great time there. So you know, the world is becoming very hospitable. You know, I think the standard of life across the globe is increasing. That's only going to increase with Bitcoin adoption.
And it's that process of, for the first time, you're able to really think about, well, why am I paying tax? Sorry, to get locked up against my will for a number of months when none of the regulations that were put in place I agreed with, but I had no choice. Like, you've just lost all options. And then stupid shit, like they still want you to pay your road tax. It's like, are you serious? We haven't driven anywhere. This kind of stuff happens all the time, I guess. So CK, coming up over the next few months, what plans are in store for BTC Inc? Have you guys got some big conferences that have been lined up that are in addition to any others that you've been doing? What's taking your time and attention?
Well, the Bitcoin conference, May 18th through the 20th over in Miami Beach, Florida, that is going to be incredible. So Coin 2023, going to be the biggest event of the year. I don't know which other events are actually going to be even happening just because this crypto bear market is destroying events and destroying companies left and right. It seems especially brutal. So we're going to be there. It's going to be lots of Bitcoiners. Historically, 2022, we had 26,000 Bitcoiners, which is the biggest Bitcoin crypto event, one of the biggest tech and fintech events out there. I think it's a fantastic way to just really feel like a physical manifestation of the Bitcoin ecosystem all in one place. I think it's a huge statement to the world. So we're doing it again in Miami. I think it's going to be just as big. Some people are bearish, but I think it's going to be just as big as past years. And I mean, tickets are still cheap. So bit.tc/conference to get a ticket.
Wow. I'd love to make it at some stage, I have to say. It's one of those things that I'm sitting in Melbourne the last few years and I've got further and further down the Bitcoin rabbit hole. And my consumption of YouTube has kind of like ratcheted up as I watch all these events. And like, God, I've got to get there at some stage. But it isn't always possible with small babies and lockdown. So at some stage, I'll sort that out. And so how do you see the kind of the future of conferences? Like, I attended a few in-person events here in Australia. So shout out to the Bitcoin Bush Bash that sprung up during the lockdowns here. The meeting Bitcoiners in person is one of the most awesome things I've ever done. You just have so much in common in terms of how you see the world. Of course, we could all be in this massive echo chamber where we're all fucked and we've made a decision that's going to screw our kids over and whatever. But it's a lot of fun meeting people in person. So even with a bear market in mind, I imagine that, you know, you guys are fairly bullish on the future because of the future of Bitcoin. I recently did a small poll just on my Twitter profile of, you know, how many people will be self-custodying Bitcoin as a result of this recent bear market. And I think the answer that most people came back was a 50% of people, what was it? Oh, I can't even remember now. Basically, the large proportion of people who've got wrecked through this last bear market are going to now end up with self-custodied Bitcoin. And all those people are now going to be wanting to go to events like Bitcoin Miami and learn more about it and all this kind of stuff. So, yeah, I mean, you guys, I guess, are pretty pumped for the future. You did an Amsterdam event as well. Will it be a case of springing up in different parts of the world or just see how it goes?
Well, I'm excited to do Europe again. We're just focused on Miami and Europe, and Miami 2023 is going to be incredible. Coiners are best in person. Honestly, I think Bitcoiners can actually be pretty rough on the internet. There's just so much bullshit. People have ran out of patience. They can just be a little short on the internet. And that's unfortunate, but that's absolutely not the case in person. And I really do think that in-person gatherings, they make you 10 times as bullish. It's electrifying. And then you can see a world that runs on Bitcoin. And you're like, wow, this world is going to kick the fiat world's ass. So much more energy, so much more excitement, so much more ingenuity, so much more optimism. It's incredible. So I've heard amazing things about the Bush Bash. I have not been, but I've been to a lot of Bitcoin events, and it's true for all of them, honestly. From your bar hangout to your one-on-one with a Bitcoin friend to Bitcoin Miami. So Bitcoin 23, May 18th through the 20th. It's going to be awesome. Don't miss it. It's going to be history once again. And we are thinking big. We're always thinking big. We have always pushed the envelope. So that's why we're the number one event. So we did the giant volcano. El Salvador's illegal tender announcement was at Bitcoin 21. Jack Mahler's has dropped plenty of amazing news. Robinhood's dropped news. Like, this is the platform. This is where people come together. So this is where history happens. You got to be a part of it, right? So I'm excited. I'm just working so hard on it. It's awesome. And, you know, I didn't even mention the next issue of the print magazine. The current issue is the Orange Party issue that has an op-ed by Nayib Bukele, the president of El Salvador, the only country that's really adopted Bitcoin in any meaningful way. And our next one, I'm not going to tease the name, but it hits. It's fire. And I'm really excited for it. And like, people should go to store.bitcoinmagazine.com and check out the Redux collection. It's the past four issues from the Orange Party all the way to the El Salvador issue. And like, that's history. That's going to be some rare collectible money right there. You heard it here first. You're going to want to get that. I recommend getting two issues. Two subscriptions. So that way you got one for cold storage, one for safekeeping, and then one for reading.
So that's a physical print magazine that will become a collectible, essentially.
Absolutely, yeah.
Interesting. And so what are some of the opportunities that you guys see aside from print media and events? Is there anything else that's in the pipeline that's exciting? Or like, what does the market need, in your opinion?
I mean, the market needs education. The market needs authority that's behind the Bitcoin-only position. I feel like all of the authority is behind a multi-coin or an anti-Bitcoin position. So we need to keep pushing authority behind a pro-Bitcoin position, because guess what? Bitcoin is scientific. Bitcoin is the most scrutinized software project in the history of mankind. Bitcoin is rooted in ancient wisdom. Like, Bitcoin is incredibly deep, and if it works, its promise is awesome. So we need authority to push that message. Like, this is a better operating system for humanity. The cost of not adopting it is huge.
Just to home in on a phrase there, authority. Like, what do you think gives authority to a project? Like, what are you really referring to in that sense? Like, high profile characters or institutions, or like, what would be an authoritative figure? Or is it just the mentality of people that have adopted Bitcoin?
Well, I mean, I think it's a combination. You know, it's the masses that are adopting Bitcoin, the plebs. It's the people who have a lot of clout who are putting their name on the line. And then it is the organizations that are effectively arbitraging Bitcoin and fiat authority. So that's what Bitcoin Magazine does. We do the biggest conference in the world. We have verified social media across every platform. We integrate with as many distribution systems as we can. We distribute a print magazine in physical locations. We do everything that we can to arbitrage from the Bitcoin world and the fiat world, and to bridge that gap, to track people, to show an authority that's actually saying, no, it's not crypto. No, it's not blockchain. It's Bitcoin. And here's why. And we pass on that authority to Bitcoiners. You know, one of the things I'm most proud of is we have a contributor network of over 500 people who are actively contributing content to Bitcoin Magazine. And this is like web-generated alpha that no money can buy, effectively. A author or a writer for CoinDesk can't generate a pleb op-ed. Like, it's impossible. We have more than we can like ask for. You know, we have to reject them. That's how many like is just coming through our door. So
I have to confess, actually, Sika, I wrote an article in January of 2021, which you guys published. So I had a piece
nice.
Published.
Congrats.
And thank you. And my wife then got scared that we were promoting the fact that we were buying Bitcoin. And so I had to ask Dylan to take it down. So it's no longer an article on
and now you're doing
Bitcoin
a podcast.
Magazine. But now, exactly, now I'm talking about it openly online. So, you know, I should find it and dig it out again and repost it. It was a letter to my 18-month-old daughter as to why I was buying more Bitcoin. And it was very well received.
We had someone else who did the same thing.
Yeah.
William Shulkoff.
Okay.
I'm sure you had a good experience. You know,
no, it was great.
Peter, I
started getting
they're all amazing.
Started getting emails with like suggested content, and it's actually when you start writing, you really have to understand what you're saying to write it. And it's, you know, you can listen to podcasts, you can watch documentaries, you can do, you know, a ton of reading, but it's not for me personally until I started really writing about subjects that I had to kind of properly distill how I thought about it. So it could be a, you know, potential. Now I've got the time alongside the pod to pick up again and start doing some more writing. It's something I'm certainly thinking about. So yeah, I'll get in touch with you guys if that's the case. Well, CK, listen, so a whole hour has basically flown by. Your Thanksgiving turkey is marinating away and it's time to go and hang out with your family. So thank you so much for taking the time to have a conversation with me today. I've really enjoyed it. And, you know, there are people out there that will learn from your insights, no doubt. And yeah, let's carry on building some Bitcoin education. And thank you so much for your time. My final question is, where can people get in touch if they want to reach out?
Yeah, so Twitter's the best for me, @CK_snarks. And at Bitcoin Magazine, the Bitcoin Conference, @thebitcoinconf.tc/conference. Mm-hmm. And then store.bitcoinmagazine.com. That's where you can get your tickets. That's where you can get your print Bitcoin magazines. And, you know, we're very active. We're here spreading the word of Bitcoin. And we're here trying to, you know, give the pro Bitcoin position, you know, some authority in the world and make sure that people are paying attention to Bitcoin. So it's that important. We need the world to adopt it. It is a human imperative and the opportunity cost is exponential if we don't get on board. So we're here trying to make it happen and we're doing our part. And just follow us. We'd appreciate it. And yeah, come to the conference.
Let's do it. All right, CK. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Okay, friends, nice work. You made it all the way to the end of the episode. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this conversation. As I said at the start, if you have any questions, then please don't hesitate to reach out. And if you enjoyed the episode, then please rate, like, subscribe, and share. That's it for now. Enjoy the rest of your day. All the best, Jake.